So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
Today, there is just way too much going on. Oh my God, Sherlyn and I and everybody at the site are underwater.
This week, this month,
everything. Sherlyn's still reeling from all the Apple reviews, but now we've got a ton of Amazon news. We've got a ton of, we've got some news from Google, which dared to have an event the same freaking day as Amazon. And Sherlyn is also has reviewed the Apple Watch Ultra. We'll be chatting about all those things, so stay tuned for that. As always, folks, subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you're getting podcasts. If you dig us, leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcastengadget.com. You can also join us on the live stream on our YouTube channel Thursdays, typically around 10 a.m. Eastern. We're a little later today, but, you know, just follow there. You can see where the exact timing for the episode is if you're subscribing to us on YouTube. Okay, Sherlyn. So I feel like we go through many, many product events, you know, and for some reason, it is the Amazon event that I always dread the most. So,
really?
Yeah, because let me give listeners a little background here. Typically, most other companies kind of give us a glimpse at the news. Like, we can prepare, we can write stuff, we can get ready. Amazon, don't do that.
There's also Apple.
There's also Apple,
but us in advance.
We care more about Apple products, right? Like, they matter a little more than the next Kindle Fire or than the next Fire, you know, streamer or something. So I don't know.
I think what it is more that, like, there's just so much more in terms of leaks, right?
Yes,
and there's so
yes.
many more credible leaks for Apple that we're better able to prepare for an Apple event than an Amazon event. Before we get too much into this, everyone, I just want to give you a heads up that we will be saying the Amazon Assistant's name a bunch of times during this segment. So you might want to go ahead and mute the microphone on your Amazon speaker right now.
I think basically there's maybe lack of interest in the leakers, although there were some things that that popped up along the FCC. But yeah, so we have to sign up to basically watch this Amazon event, a special link for media to watch while Amazon Lives blogs it. It's just a whole scramble to get everything done, folks. So if we sound tired, it's because we've juggled that. We're dealing with so much of stuff. And they typically also drop a ton of news in a really short amount of time. So it's always a scramble. This year, or at least this season, because I think maybe they have multiple sometimes, I think the biggest thing is a new Kindle that they announced, the Kindle Scribe. It is a Kindle that you can write on. And I feel like that's something. It is a big Kindle. It's a 10.2-inch, 300 ppi display, basically as big as an iPad. Looks like there is, you know, one side is good for holding. It comes with a stylus that you can jot notes down on, or just like anything. You could do anything. You could draw. You could write. It's going to start at $340. I looked at this thing and I was like, man, remarkable. And
I know.
Remarkable, the tablet company, by the way. And any other company that has like an e-ink tablet with a stylus, you're done. You're dead. Because unfortunately, like, Amazon is kind of the killer e-ink company. But what do you think of this thing, Sherlyn?
I mean, my first question was kind of, is there like an onboard attachment or slot for that stylus?
It's magnetically, from what I saw, there is a loop. And I also saw something like it just attached to the side. But yeah, you're right. Unless the stylus slides in somewhere, you're probably going to lose it. I think everyone's going to have that problem. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, the idea is there. This is an e-ink tablet for us to write on. And, you know, like, kind of a coincidence. Last year, Samsung did away with the Note line. And this year we got a Kindle Scribe, and, like, you know, note takers are never going to be left behind. Don't worry. We had Remarkable, you said, like, has been around for a little bit and carving a niche for itself in the e-ink tablet space with the, like, stylus and everything. I had the pleasure of, like, kind of playing with one, like, I don't know, a while ago. I just love it, right? Like,
it's nice.
With the latency, with the, yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's nice. I think the Remarkable design is sleeker and looks a little cleaner than Amazon's Kindle design. I kind of hate the way all of Amazon's products look. Like, unless they get to the really expensive Kindles, which I guess this is one of them, they're all a little clunky. They're not as polished as I like them to be. The Remarkable 2 is $279. So cheaper than this Kindle, but I believe there is a there's a subscription. It's a $3 a month subscription to Power to get to their cloud stuff. And I feel like that has, every time I've looked at that tablet, I'm like, I don't want to deal with a subscription to this company that may not exist in a couple of years, and then I'm stuck with a tablet that, you know, may not fully function. Are you excited about an e-ink, you know, writing tablet, Trillin?
I used the Galaxy Notes when they were, you know, basically little e-ink tablet notepad things. And I mean, there's a lot of work, like, that has to be figured out here. First of all, does Amazon have good handwriting recognition? Does it have good palm rejection? There's a lot of questions we don't yet have answers for. I am excited by the idea. I'm just not sure the execution will be there. And also, like, how much do I write things down nowadays? I don't know about y'all. Yeah. I don't do that all that much anymore, even though I keep wanting to. I have the urge to.
I think we a lot of us have just stopped handwriting because, yeah, we have, I tap more. If I'm out reporting somewhere, I'm tapping notes on my phone furiously. You know, if I'm not at my keyboard, I'm doing notes on my phone. I'm like recording audio.
I'm
with
just
my
voice
phone.
Recording and then transcribing.
And transcribing, you could do that. But our phones kind of handle the most of it. But I do miss handwriting. You know, I miss jotting down notes. I miss like scribbling. I try to have a reporter's notebook that I rarely ever use. So I feel like if I was in school, especially for kids in college who want like a bigger interface for reading books and also want to jot down notes, because I did always like that with physical books in college, this could be better than like a standard e-reader. But also at this point, if you really want to do this, you probably just get like an actual tablet, right? A tablet with a stylus and
like the Apple, the iPad pencil thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why not? I mean, that those look good and they're, you know, restricted to like certain colors. I do wonder what the build and size and weight of this is. Maybe a more lightweight tablet. Like you said, the Remarkable was very well built and you could just take it anywhere with you. There's also like other things out there, like a Rocket Book, right? Like an actual,
I've never heard of a Rocket Book.
Oh, the Rocket Book started off as this like book that you can like microwave and erase the marks you've left on it. But then it evolved. And so now you can't really microwave it, but you can write on it, erase it and reuse it. So it's environmentally a little bit more friendly. And then whatever you write on it, you can like scan to the cloud or whatever. So the whole idea of writing things down, I still love it. I still think of it as a way to kind of like organize my like huge thoughts. If I have big plans I need to draw up, my first instinct is still to go to pen and paper. But the important part of it is, how do you keep those notes? How do you then store them? How do you digitally search them? So
then we don't know. And like when I handwrite notes, like I write more in cursive than I do in print. And then my cursive notes are just like really fast jots. Like it's almost like doctor's writing. Like if I look at it, I could read it. I feel like most other people looking at my like actual cursive may not be able to. And unfortunately, OCR and computers like cannot deal with cursive at all. Like unless you're printing down, you're kind of screwed here.
I love cursive. Yeah. Some of them pick it up. But yeah, you're right. Most of the time, cursive trips people up. Yeah.
So. Question from Turbine in the chat. This is not with Android, right? They say, like, I think some may want to use another platform to keep their notes on. This is not Android. This is Amazon's Kindle ecosystem, you know. So if you're an existing Kindle user, like, this may actually work for you. A lot of that data, your books are all stored in the Amazon library. That's generally been pretty stable for me. I think the only issue people have had with Amazon is Comixology. The integration between Amazon and Comixology has been rocky. I know friends who've like lost some books that they had bought before Amazon bought Comixology, so they have to like go and ask to, you know, get things reinstated. So Amazon's cloud seems okay, but you're right. This isn't Android. Maybe you'd be able to get apps. There are Kindle apps on iOS and Android for you to access something, so maybe you'd be able to get it that way.
Like, right, you'd be able to store your notes and access them through your phone still. Mm-hmm. Through the, like, Amazon app, maybe.
One of my favorite Kindle things, which is kind of an not really a heralded feature, but you can get an email address and you can forward any email or article or books, anything, to your Kindle address. And I used to have like if this then that. I used to set up routines for like if I save something to Pocket, it would like get pushed to my Kindle, and that was always super useful. So there are a lot of ways to move this data and utilize it, but you gotta have to use your tricks here. So anyway, I think this thing is cool. Maybe too expensive. I would love to play with it at some point.
Oh, me too. I know. Yeah, we can't wait to get our review unit and we'll see.
That'd be fun. I know you were also excited, which is funny, Sherlyn. You were excited about Amazon's Halo Rise, which is their $140 bedside sleep tracker, even though you're also the person who hates sleep gadgets.
Well, caveat being, I hate sleep gadgets that I have to wear bed. I love tracking my sleep. I love getting sleep insights, but I hate wearing bulky ass watches to bed. So this is like a potentially good implementation, right? And let's start by saying Amazon is not the very first company to do something like this, right? Google already introduced like sleep sensing via radar on the Nest Hub second generation, like the smart display. So this is also, it's a bedside sleep tracker too. But Google's thing is more of a smart display with this feature built in, whereas Amazon's Halo Rise is a dedicated device built to track your sleep from next to your bed.
It's also a wake-up light too, which is
exactly
nice.
That's so nice. It's got no cameras, no microphones on it, according to Amazon, and it uses a contactless or a non-contact motion sensor to look for patterns in your body movement while you're in bed, and then decipher if you're, you know, asleep, and also what sleep zone you're in based on your respiratory rate. So, I mean, cool. And then every morning you can wake up, you can set a smart alarm, and the light that's built in will glow slowly, gradually with the sunrise.
The sounds of angels will ring and you will just wake up fully refreshed. Yeah.
Also, I mean, it's also kind of like a clock, so you can see the time, but it's also got like sensors on it, to detect like what your environment is like. So if your bedroom is a little too cold or a little too humid or a little too bright, it'll then in the morning tell you, or I mean, maybe after some time, it'll be like, hey, you slept better when it was colder at night, or hey, you slept for longer, or you entered more REM sleep when it was, you know, more humid in the night. So I think, honestly, this is all in theory, right? We don't know yet whether it works as advertised. I have called dibs on reviewing this one, just FYI.
Uh-huh.
But my manager is very concerned for my well-being.
Yeah,
he's all
maybe
like,
maybe don't review.
No. He's like, well, don't rush to review this. So this is something that maybe I'll do more of a long-term thing about. But, you know, I'm very excited because finally I might be able to track my sleep without wearing something to bed. Now, I'm fully aware there are things like mattress sensors out there that I could use as well. But somehow like a mattress sensor feels a little much.
A little much. You don't want anything to feel like, I wouldn't want to feel the mattress sensor. I know those have existed for a while.
Yeah, I'm totally the princess and the pea. I'm that princess.
Mm-hmm. One thing I will say is I don't know, this is a cool idea, if it was from a company other than Amazon, you know, maybe other than some other companies I don't fully trust. I'm more like, what are you doing with this data, Amazon? Like, what are you going to sell to me after this? Like, oh, I see you're really taking a long time to get to sleep. Here are some subscriptions to, you know, what do you call it? The sleep pills that people have.
Sure, sleeping pills, yeah.
Sleeping pills, something like that. Here's a book that can help you relax. Hey, I hear exercise is a great thing to help you get some sleep. Here's the Amazon exercise device. It is a company that I think is comically bad at some of this stuff. And also, I have Echoes in a lot of rooms in my house because, unfortunately, I find it very convenient. I do like that product, but it won't shut up. I don't know if you have this problem, Sherlyn, but
I used to.
Mm-hmm. If I ask it for a question and be like, by the way, did you know you could blah, 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 blah? I'm like, shut up. Please stop talking to me. I ask it to play white noise occasionally if the baby is sleeping in the room with us. And it will be like, before it plays the soothing noise that I desperately need right now, it's like, by the way, you like our free white noise. Would you like to pay for an better white noise?
Of course they ask that.
Of course they ask that. And also I'm like, shut up. I just want white noise. So
my favorite is when it like suddenly glows and there's like the notification thing. And you know, we are so trained to have to like not have those notification rings on. So I'm like, hey, what's up? What you got to tell me? They're like, by the way, I was like, you rang to tell me that you can ring? They were like, by the way, did you know? Blah blah blah. Or like, by the way, this pack. Some of my friends have Echoes at home and they find it helpful to help them track and order their like groceries and refill for them. But I'm like,
it's very annoying. Yeah.
Leave me alone. Don't give me a notification just to tell me you can do things. I don't want you to be in my life. So I unplugged it. So bitch is out of my life. So.
Yeah. I feel like Amazon still doesn't get that balance. How is that? I mean, you tested and you wrote about their like fitness tracker that was also their mood tracker. Is that thing, does it still exist? Is it still a thing happening?
So Halo, the Halo band initially was that screenless thing that would detect your tone. And then last year, the company, you know, unveiled the new Halo band, which basically looked like Fitbits. We didn't review those because cheaper Fitbits, cool, thanks, bro, we're good. You know what I mean? Like, it's not the most high priority thing. And I don't know that Amazon made that big of a push other than on Prime Day when it was like, hey, you can get our cheap fitness trackers for even cheaper. The tone detection feature was always just like kind of weird. It wasn't very insightful.
Immediate pushback. Everyone was like, what the hell are you doing?
Firestorm. Yeah. Right. But then when I actually tested it out too, it was like, you're not telling
me. It's like, you're breaking all of our sensors. You're too sassy. I can't.
I mean, there's that.
Halo was like, I can't. Please.
Halo was like, I give up. Like, she walked off. It walked off. No. The thing was like, and as a refresher, like, you would get, you know, people, the thing would detect your tone throughout the day and listen to, like, you know, and tell you, oh, you sounded sarcastic. Oh, you sounded happy at this time of day. But it wouldn't have any voice recordings for you to refer back to. It used the microphone to detect your tone, but it didn't record anything, right? That's a whole privacy thing. So when I would look back at the end of the day and be like, oh, I was sassy as hell in the morning and then like really happy in the afternoon. What happened? I can't, there's no data to tell me what happened. So that was when I tested it 2 years ago. And now I haven't since, because why do I need someone to police my tone or tell me?
Especially Amazon. Maybe we need some sort of holistic device too. Cause I've been doing like the Noom app for like, you know, tracking what I'm eating and stuff like that.
That's the metabolism one, right?
It's not, I mean, it's just like diet. Oh, it's a diet app, you know, basically.
Noom caught a lot of flack. I don't know if
they catch a lot of flack.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking like, we have all these services that do like kind of different things, but what you want is something that will help you, like, hey, by the way, let me help you sleep. Let me help you, like, hey, let's just keep track of your calories automatically. How is this stuff making you feel? Maybe you shouldn't have a burger for lunch because you feel really lethargic afterwards. You need kind of one device or one platform to kind of unify all that stuff, and we don't have that. That would be, like, the ideal. Yeah.
That's what some companies are trying to do, right? Like Apple and Google, I'm sure they're trying to do that. So.
They do it great for exercise and stuff, but not for like food tracking, not for like so many different
things. They have features. They just don't. Yeah. Don't give them ideas. They're going to buy MyFitnessPal or something.
I mean, they absolutely will. So anyway, Halo Rise, it's a bedside sleep tracker. It is really weird and creepy. And Trillin, for apparently that is good. That
you know me. It's spooky season. I love everything creepy.
Spooky season. We've got a bunch of other Amazon products. Yes. So let's just move through here. There's a new Echo Studio that has an improved spatial audio processor, which is kind of cool. I like the first Echo Studio. I bought one of those. It's in my kitchen. It is very loud. The like 360-degree sound is actually pretty good because it does a good job of making you sound like you're not listening to a speaker. You're not listening to like a bunch of speakers in one place. It kind of expands the sound, which is similar to what Apple is doing with the HomePod and everything. So it actually sounds pretty good for what it is. So I bought it because I like good speakers. Getting improved sound. The Echo Dots are also getting improved audio, and Echo Dots are also getting Eero Mesh Wi-Fi tech built in. That is super cool and interesting. But again,
would like to point out that Google already did that. But yes,
yeah. I mean, sure. That's Google also did that, but it's nice to have, you know, the option for both platforms, you know, because you're either, you know, if you're going for a smart home assistant, like you kind of have to stay within the ecosystem.
Yep,
so
yep.
To have so more this Echo feature Dots having, out there.
Yep. Absolutely. Sorry.
Super cool.
Mm-hmm. I also want to point out that the Echo Studio costing just $200 is pretty impressive.
Good deal
to me.
That's a good deal. Like, that's also kind of why I ended up getting it. I think I also bought it on sale. So hold out for sales if you guys like any of this stuff. But the Echo Studio, as like a centerpiece speaker that you just want to throw music to or a podcast or whatever, or just like talk to as an Alexa device, sounds incredible. And it's probably better. Other things, Amazon announced their first QLED Fire TV, which looks like, you know, last year they announced the Fire TV Omni line. Now they're bumping up to QLED, which is the sort of, it's LCD tech with quantum dots, and something everybody's been doing for a while. It gives you better color, better accuracy in general. These look nice. Let me see here. $800 for a 65-inch, $1,100 for a 75-inch. Not bad, but when it comes to TV stuff, wait for sales if you're going to buy one of these, or buy like a known brand. Like, I would trust TCL more than any of these Amazon things. So just, you know, be aware there. There is a new Fire TV Cube, which I wrote up, and it's another cube. It's a slightly rounder cube. That's kind of the big thing. It can talk to your cable box, so you can issue Alexa commands if you have one of those. There's an Alexa Voice Remote Pro, which doesn't come with the Fire TV Cube, by the way. I did get them to confirm that. So they announced a new remote. You have to buy it separately. Yeah. The remote's another $35, but it also has more buttons, shortcut buttons. And you can also tell Alexa to be like, hey, where's my remote? And it'll start, like, the remote will start, you know, making noise in case you dropped it under the couch or something. I think that's pretty cool. There are also some new features for Alexa that are more into, I don't know, there's improved clothing search, a deeper integration.
Oh, yeah, shopping and that sort of thing. I don't know. Of course, everything is for shopping. Everything's about commerce. Amazon just wants your money. Any way it can make Alexa, see, I said it. Any way it can make its assistant better at doing that, it will do.
Alexa is growing. The Astro robot is getting some upgrades for home and business. It can keep an eye on your pets while you're at work, or basically act like a security sentry in your office. This thing was originally released for $1,500. It's on sale now for $1,000. So if you really want an 80s-esque robot crawling around your home, that's kind of a thing. I feel like this is something you would probably want at some point, Trillin.
It's cute as hell. So I saw like a different robot recently that was supposed to be for pets, I guess, where it would dispense treats and snacks. And at first I missed the memo that it was for pets. And I was like, oh my gosh, a robot that would follow me around and dispense treats? Yes, give me. I got so excited, and then it was like, no, it's for dogs. And
after the treats were in your mouth, you were like, oh, wait, no.
I have yet to taste a dog treat. No,
we've all made that mistake.
Okay. We probably have, but no, I could see this. I personally want to have an Astro in my home. That is for sure. Other than bringing me treats and carrying things around for me, though, I don't really know what else I would do with it. Like, I don't need a security sentry.
Yeah, you don't need it. Maybe somebody with an office or with a home too. Like, I mean, I'm living in a house outside of Atlanta now. It's like sometimes I'm like, I have no idea what's going on in the basement. You know, I don't have any idea what's going on the first floor if we're upstairs. And then
I could just get the sentry, that this Astro, for my building, because my neighbors would appreciate it. We're always snooping on the front door.
That's what you do as neighbors. But also, again, I don't want Amazon to have this just like fully. What's Astro doing? What is Astro just sitting around the house doing? It's just like,
why is it blinking?
Yeah, why is it blinking? Why is it a 3D scan? Why is it scanning my entire home? Why is it looking through my pantry?
Why is it raiding my fridge? Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. What does it know, and what is it saying to Amazon? And this is a company I can't trust. You know, that's when we talk about a lot of these products. I can trust Amazon enough to be like, okay, I'll have an Echo speaker in my house because I do like voice commands for stuff. And a lot of that information, not super big of a deal. Full like video ability to walk around my house wherever, especially after we've seen evidence of Amazon workers basically like saving Echo call, like voice logs, and could be using them badly. I don't trust this company. I feel like they have a lot of work to do to really get there. So anyway, Astro Robot, I'm not a huge fan, but who knows? I will probably end up having to test this at some point. So I guess we will see how it goes. There's some stuff with Blink. Blink is adding its first wired camera. Ring is getting radar detection on the Spotlight Pro. I do kind of like spotlights, again, for outside my house here. I set up Arlo cameras all around, so it catches things. It catches, like, there's a raccoon that loves to walk up in through my backyard and into my deck and, like, just starts poking around looking for food. Aww. And it's good to know for that. Luckily, we have a fenced-in yard, but if we didn't have a fenced-in yard, there are coyotes in this neighborhood. There are deer. There are people have seen mountain cats and a bear not too far away from here. So sometimes good to know what is happening around you. So, you know, that could be good for the Ring Spotlight Pro. We talked about the Eero Wi-Fi extenders. Echo Audio is getting redesigned. Echo Auto, yeah. And one other thing that's kind of interesting is that they did announce a power over Ethernet Eero device 2 which is kind of cool. So if you have Ethernet run around your home or business, you just kind of plug that thing in. I don't know if you've ever seen a power over Ethernet device, Sherlyn, but it is. I used to deal with it in IT, and it always feels like magic. It's just like, I just plug in Ethernet, and it turns on. That's all. There's no power to plug in.
Ah, the power draw. The power is draws through the Ethernet cable.
Like,
gotcha.
It just feels like magic to me. They did announce there's a whole bunch of other Eero devices for bigger homes, basically. So, if you have a big place, it's kind of cool. I feel like the big takeaway for me is that the Kindle Scribe is a really interesting device. Like, that is my big takeaway from Amazon, and I hope to play with one soon. Did anything leap out at you, Sherlyn?
I mean, I think what leapt out at me was that there was the big surprises were front-loaded, and that you and I already talked about. The Kindle Scribe was very cool. I thought the Halo Rise was very interesting. Everything else seemed either incremental or like copying other people, but in a way that so here's my takeaway, right? Last year, or I think maybe 2 years ago, our takeaway from this event, the Amazon Annual Palooza, is that they just do everything other people have done and make it cheaper. But this year, and maybe even last year, but this year more than last, I feel like, they're doing different things. Although I will keep reminding people that, other people have already did it, right? The Kindle Scribe, they're taking over Remarkable. Yeah. The Halo Rise, they're copying Google. The Astro Robot may be slightly, it's more unique. We haven't seen updates about the Osmo. We didn't see updates about the Echo Frames or the Echo Ring, the finger ring, not the camera ring. So, finger ring.
Phrasing. Google also had an event, and I bet you can't phrase anything that they did badly.
I think I sure can.
Yeah, you probably can.
Ben the producer breaking in for a second here. The podcast team has a joke that important news always drops right after we finish recording, and that happened today. We have a big update on Google Stadia. Take it away, Devendra.
Google is officially ending its Stadia game streaming service. This really came as a surprise because it didn't seem like, Google was actually planning to wind things down so quickly. Good thing for subscribers, though. Google says it'll be refunding all Stadia hardware purchases and software and add-on purchases from the store. So at least you're not losing money here. You'll be able to continue playing games until January 18th, 2023. So you can finish, the middle of a game that you're currently in. And Google says they're expecting to have the majority of refunds done by the middle of January next year. Here's a statement from Google. They say the underlying technology platform that powers Stadia has been proven at scale and transcends gaming. We see clear opportunities to apply this technology across other parts of Google like YouTube, Google Play, and our augmented reality AR efforts, as well as to make it available for our industry partners, which aligns with where we see the future of gaming headed. Google goes on to say that they remain deeply committed to gaming. Imagine that. And they'll continue to invest in new tools, technologies, and platforms that power the success of developers, industry partners, cloud customers, and creators. So that's the statement. They basically just posted a blog post apologizing for all this by Phil Harrison, Vice President and General Manager of Stadia. We've always said that Stadia was kind of a hard sell for Google. A streaming service like this should probably be a subscription type deal, maybe similar to Amazon Luna or something more like Xbox Cloud Streaming that Microsoft is doing with Game Pass. With Stadia, you had to buy the hardware and you had to buy games separately, and that just never really made any sense. And unfortunately, it looks like, just hasn't been popular enough to stick around. RIP Stadia. This was an event that I was busy with a review thing, so I totally even missed that what was happening here. What are the highlights to you?
Yeah, it was not fun, first of all, because Amazon's event barely wrapped up at 1 p.m. and Google's event started right on the dot at 1 p.m. So I just had to jump right over and start covering. This was Google's Search On event 2022, and it's really focused on Google's products like search, maps, news, things that help people explore the world and absorb information, right? Because Google, for the longest time, and still is, right, the way we make sense of the world, the way we find or learn things, which I hate to give them this much credit, but that's just...
That's kind of what they've done, unfortunately.
This is what we do now. It's a fact. So anything they announce at this event, you know, usually has a great impact on how we learn. And so there's a lot of updates coming to search. Like we said, there's I think one thing that was very intriguing that they did was to make it easier to surface or find search results from forums like Reddit, mm-hmm. for example.
Oh, good. So I don't have to go to Reddit.
You don't actually have to go.
Okay.
Exactly. So I find that like a very interesting update. And sort of related to that topic is that Google's also kind of going to change the way search results look. So with more of a focus on sources like short form video, think YouTube Shorts or
like vertical video sources like
TikTok. I know we don't like it, but you have to think about the generation that's going straight to TikTok first for learning things.
But they're probably not going to Google to find this stuff, right?
Right. So it's kind of weird. Yeah. I like, who are you targeting with this? But I guess they're trying to help old people like me understand that there's a TikTok source for this. I don't know. But it's going to look different. And I mean, Google also wants to make it easier for you to search for things. So part of this update is when you are typing keywords into the search bar, it'll start, you know, surfacing up these little badges or bubbles with like suggested, you know, the autocomplete suggestion, but like more options than just a long list of autocomplete. Is like, oh, if you type in the word brownie, it might surface up blondie or something, like, you know, like other related categories of things. So you could see that as, you know, coming out in the coming months as an update to search. What I thought jumped out at me, though, were some of the changes coming to maps. Let's start with neighborhood vibe.
Vibe check. Okay.
I don't even know where to start with this. I think when I was fortunate enough to be briefed a little bit on this feature, and neighborhood vibe, basically when you're exploring a new place or any place, doesn't have to be new, I guess, on Google Maps, you'll start seeing these little like colorful zone type things. And then as you scroll, the photos and videos will pop up about that area to tell you what's popular there. And it's based on Google's posts that people contribute to Google Maps. So the more popular ones will surface. The data that Google has that tells them what places are more popular are also more likely to surface. And then there is some human moderation. So you're not going to be like, you know, if there's Dick Planet or something that like happens to be very popular because bots decided to like give it a lot of upvotes or something. I don't know. You know, there is some moderation going on so that you're not like bombarded by, you know, similar to Nextdoor kind of vibes. But I'm just like, look, I get that you kind of want to check out a neighborhood's vibe, I guess, before you go. But like, how, first of all, nothing can replace the real thing. And Google's not trying to do that.
Well, you mean the real thing?
By visiting a place and getting
but
the
it's
real
more about preparing.
Vibes.
You're driving around. You're in a new town. Like, what is this corner of town like? What is there to see or do here? Like, that is useful. I use Google for a lot of stuff now. Yeah.
So this is something that like suits your like. This is something that you would find helpful. Okay. Because I was struggling to see why. I was just like,
you're like, but I don't go anywhere.
Huh. No, I do. I do. But I never really thought that I would need something. But that's I'll get to like where this feature makes a bit more sense in a little bit. But anyway, I'm glad you think it's, I'm just like, okay, well, what is the tenderloin going to look like? But anyway.
That is something where you're like, new person new to San Francisco has never been there before. You'd be like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Never knew.
I don't know.
Can it replace the smells? But anyway, more features coming to Google Maps include updates to Immersive View and Live View. So Immersive View is this feature where like in the past it was kind of restricted to, I think, specific buildings or specific landmarks, where you get there and then like it'll show you sort of an ARE, VRE, like a video of what that place looks like so you can explore. So Immersive View is going to expand to more landmarks. It's going to be covering 250 landmarks globally. The Live View feature also gets like a search function. So you can use Live View now, which is Live View is when you use the AR, your camera viewfinder, to see what's around you and get directions overlaid on the real world to tell you turn left here with a big arrow pointing in front of you, right? So now you can use that to search for things like nearby ATMs, restaurants, bathrooms, that sort of thing. And, you know, like see what's literally near you, which is cool. And then finally, this is what I'm most excited about. Google's making some updates to food searching.
Okay.
This one was interesting. Google offered me an exclusive interview with their vice president and general manager of local.
Did Mr. Google be like, yo, Sherlyn, food? You want to talk about food?
Yeah, they're like,
you're like, yeah,
ayo,
yeah.
Ayo, we hear you like food. This is Yul Kwon. If you find the name familiar, this person was a former Survivor champion.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
What?
He won Survivor Cook Islands, which is that controversial season of when they separated everyone into tribes based on their race. Anyway, Yul Kwon is Asian. Uh-huh. Yes. Cool. Anyway, he won that season, represent. I was, surprised and that I got to talk to him, but I was very happy he won. Anyway, he's led a lot of he's done a lot of things in his life, right? He's been a small business owner. He's owned a bunch of Red Mango franchise, outlets in, the California Bay Area. And now he works at Google. I know just a lot. Read my whole article for the full story, but basically Google is adding features to make it easier to find specifically the food you want. So, for example, you look at this weird, not weird, but foreign looking pastry that you don't know what it's called. You can use the AR, the lens thing to identify the pastry, but you can also, in the same thread or same search, find a place near you that sells that thing. So it'll both identify the, let's say, soup dumplings and then tell you, hey, Ding Tai Fung nearby has these crab meat dumplings. Even though I don't think the system is sophisticated enough to distinguish between crab meat and pork dumplings just yet, but okay.
This is all stepping towards getting there, right? I could imagine maybe the Google Assistant could actually be a good assistant someday and be like, hey, I'm in this new neighborhood. I'm like, what's good for lunch? Dumplings? How's dumplings sounds good? Dumplings sounds good. Yeah. And maybe it could be something like that. The whole thing is, we look at a lot of this stuff and we're like, who would use any of this? And it's just Google, laying the groundwork for basically, indexing the entire world and directing us, making us want to go to Google as much as we go to, Google search to figure out things on the internet. I will tell you, Maps is still the thing I jump to when I go to a new place, if I'm looking for things nearby. If I'm looking for restaurant reviews, I hit both Maps and Yelp. And I do feel like Google is trying to make us, stop going to other services to figure out any of this information. So
I know.
Okay.
I hit Maps more than I hit Yelp. I don't even. No. I barely even hit Yelp anymore.
And a lot of other countries don't touch Yelp at all. So
exactly.
Yeah.
I will say, the company also added a new feature where you can filter by spice level for the food, which is great for me because I'm a spicy girl.
Spicy,
but. mm-hmm. Another feature that's coming is they're updating their digital menus for restaurant listings. So they're going to use more of their machine learning and AI improve those. Yeah, because some
that
of those digital menus are not
good.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of a mess right now.
I tend to use Google Maps. Once you have kids, you're all you're doing is searching for playgrounds and places, places to bring your kids, basically. And Google Maps recommendations are great because sometimes there are little places that don't really pop up normally or don't show up on a large visible map. But I did find a cute little park that's near a park we go to all the time that I had no idea about. It was 5 minutes away. It has a nice lake and a nice little playground. And I found that because of Google recommendations, and sometimes those things don't even pop up when you're doing a Google search because search doesn't always highlight every single thing. So, it's that little AI engine helped us find a new park that we'll go to quite a bit. So that sort of stuff can be useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, so related to that, the last thing they announced on the food front or the restaurant front is that the neighborhood vibe feature that I talked to y'all about is coming to these restaurant listings as well. So they want you to better understand a restaurant's vibe. Is it good for a first date? Is it good for families? So when you go to a restaurant's listing now, Google is, again, doing some of that curation to surface some of the best pictures to show you what the atmosphere is like, and then also combine it with some of the more popular reviews that highlight things about the atmosphere and vibe. Cool. So
I want more outdoor photos. I kind of want to start going back to restaurants or at least bring my kids to them once in a while. And I still don't want to eat indoors. No matter what our safety level is until we're all vaccinated and levels are much, much lower, I will not feel safe eating indoors at all. So I need to know, like, do you have seating outside? Do you have seating in the back? Like, what is the situation here? Can I bring my family here safely? And that is, like, a really inconsistent thing on Google Maps. So I'm hoping, like, they give us more. Like, it would be basically the restaurant's responsibility to show us what's actually there before we drive up there.
It's a balance, yeah. And we can talk more about this. But I had a really good conversation about, like, supporting local businesses and how Google can do that. But that's for another time, I think. Yeah.
Cool. Well, okay. Thank you for the Google update. Anything else you want to mention before we break?
No, I'm dead.
Okay. Okay, we've got some reviews to talk about. Trillin, you have both, you've reviewed the Apple Watch Ultra, which I know we were really looking forward to. And you reviewed the Fitbit Sense 2? I don't even remember this happening.
I know. Well, so the Apple Watch Ultra review, I'm still writing, but our review video is up. And our review video really focused on, and it zeroes in on the hiking experience.
Speaking of Survivor, we just like dumped you in the middle of a forest, right? Like that was the plan?
So I don't know that that was the plan necessarily, but I tried to stay as like outside of the planning process as I could, so that when I got there, I was truly disoriented. You know, Brian beat me up and threw me in the middle of the woods and just left me there to die. No, Brian figured out what trail we were taking and all of that fun stuff. And I just went along for the fun of it. And it was awesome. Now that I've spent a little bit more time with the watch, not just hiking, because you know what? When I was hiking with Brian, I was in an extremely good mood. I was like, this is great. So everything I think I thought about the watch there was through rose-tinted glasses. Yeah.
How long of a hike was this? Were you just like 15 minutes in being like, I'm exercising?
Or No. First of all, come on. You know me better.
I know.
You're actually
exercising now.
Yeah. So the hike that Brian had picked, the trail was supposed to be like a 2.5 mile, maybe 3 mile hike. But because we kept getting detoured and like, you know,
and
turned
he's bringing
around.
Camera gear too. He's carrying camera gear.
Yeah, he's carrying camera gear. I was holding just a GoPro, which is nothing. Anyway, we kept getting turned around. So we ended up being more like 5 miles long. We took about 2 hours all in because we were stopping to take videos. We were playing hide and seek. There is a blooper video that I wanted to show
corporate
people.
Corporate sanctioned hide and seek.
Corporate sanctioned, because, well, there is a feature on the Apple Watch Ultra called the siren. It's not called the siren. It is a siren, right? Like it uses the, two onboard speakers to, you know, play very loud distress signals just in case you're lost or you're immobile.
Or you find a bear and you have to play loud noises to scare a bear away.
Interesting. So, yeah. I didn't know that you do that with bears. So
loud
thankfully, the only bear I ran into was Brian. But the well, he's not a bear.
Yep.
But I hid behind a tree and had him try to find me based on the sound the watch was playing, and he managed to find me.
Granted,
I didn't hide very well.
Yeah. You should have been like, you're gonna go a mile ahead, and he has to find where you are in the forest, and
That's pretty much what
that's
we what did. He walked away from me, and then I went to hide. And then he came and found me. He did find me. So if you've watched the video, you'll see that's what we did. But the part that got left out of the video is because I was holding the GoPro while he held the main camera. I was holding it as I went to hide, and then there's one part of this clip that didn't make it into the final video where I go, I thought I found a good hiding spot. I squat, and I look. I'm like, oh, God, I'm right in front of him. Somehow ended up hiding right in front of him, so I had to like run away with the GoPro in my hand.
You were that kid that kept failing at hide and seek.
I can really imagine this
right now. Did Brian bring his dog, or were you guys just hanging
out? No, it was just us. Brian did not bring Zen. Zen is the dog star of Engadget. Mm-hmm. But so during that hiking, we did test a lot of the features that were compass based, like wayfinder, creating waypoints, backtrack.
You said you were getting lost. I thought the watch was supposed to help you from getting lost on trails. Yeah.
Well, it's not because it's not like you're loading a trail onto the watch and it's showing you where to go, right? It's more like this is a leash almost, like a safety leash, a safety net where like, okay,
it's laying breadcrumbs for where you're
walking. Exactly. Yeah. It's Hansel and Gretel. It's digital breadcrumbs. That is also if I turned it on. So I did turn it on and it did take me through like afterwards when we were done with the hike, it sort of guided me back in the same direction we came. So that feature works. It's just kind of not meant to, I envision where like if you get lost in the woods and you have been laying the breadcrumbs, but you want to go back to a specific spot on your trail and not like go back your entire trail, right? Imagine you had been meandering, taking multiple turns left and right. You don't want to go through that entire path again just to get back to a spot where you know mm-hmm. was
but
probably
can lay,
just,
you can lay like waypoints on the trail, right?
Yep, so maybe exactly.
then you could be like,
so
okay,
that's
this is
the
camp,
feature.
And then,
exactly.
yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a feature instead. So we set a waypoint to the parking lot as well as a creek, and we, you know, used the parking lot waypoint at the end to navigate back, which was, to be fair, only 450 feet away.
really?
We could hear cars zooming yeah, by at yeah. that point. It's like, all right, so follow the sound. But, you know, the watch did a good job at that. But throughout the process, though, battery drain became kind of an issue where I think it was just tapping the GPS so much that it was like, oh, crap, I started the day at like 91% when Brian picked me up in the car. By the end of our trail and by the end of our shoot, actually, it was at like 50-something percent, which is very different from my experience with the Watch Ultra in daily use. In daily use, it will easily get me to 3 days on one charge, which is wild because it's tracking several workouts a day. I am at a point where like now I work out morning and afternoon. It's pretty problematic.
You're wild.
But
is this the cellular watch or is this the normal?
No, it's not cellular. Okay. So it's a regular GPS Watch Ultra. And
I thought all the Watch Ultras had cellular. I'm confused.
I'm sorry. But I didn't set up didn't the set cellular. Up. Okay. So it's not like constantly getting data off of here, but it is connected to my phone. It's doing the regular Apple Watch thing.
Were there points where you had no internet and it was still like doing stuff?
What do you mean no internet?
If you had no cellular, you know, when you go on hikes, sometimes you have no connection at all.
We didn't lose any signal.
Really?
Yeah. We never did. Mm-hmm. We were pretty safe. But that would have been nice.
Yeah.
Honestly, it would have been a nice way to test out some of the features, but the emergency SOS features aren't available until November. Fine. But the point I was trying to make is that some of my exercises include outdoor walks as well. And the GPS also comes in on that. Like my outdoor walks are only like at most 1 to 2 miles, right? So they're not like anything that I want to be very cautious about my pace on. But if you're a long distance runner, there's also like the dual frequency GPS now that's supposed to be a bit more accurate, especially in places with a lot of buildings like Manhattan, for example. And I've read some of the other reviews that are out there where, you know, people tested it for other specific uses like running in a city, and it seems to do very well. So I hesitate to call this the watch that everyone should get. I think that there's a lot of like people
at that
for whom
price?
This. Yeah, exactly. $800. I also, first of all, oh my gosh, anyone that follows me on Twitter will know how pissed off I am at the Apple Watch Ultra.
Okay.
Two things. One, F me with a rock because holy crap, I don't want to wear this to bed to test the sleep tracking because it is big. Like it's a 49 millimeter case. It's titanium. So it's like
it's huge.
Fairly light.
It's huge.
It's, yeah. But it's huge. The strap that I wore for the first few days was the Ocean Band. That was the one with the tubular geometry where like basically it's a bunch of little straws glued together or whatever.
It doesn't look comfortable that one, from what I see.
It's not super comfortable. That one's more bulky. Still not as crap as the Galaxy Watch 5 Pro, to be clear, because it at least like wraps around your wrist nicely. But I then switched out to the Alpine Loop, which is the slightly thinner one, and it's more like a fabric-based. That's way more comfortable. In fact, I've been wearing it with the Fitbit Sense 2 that I also have. It's like they feel about equally comfortable. Still, this thing is not something I want to wear to bed, but I will because I have to test it. Anyway, the thing that truly upset me about the Apple Watch Ultra, and I promise we will move on after this, is, okay, so the whole design of the case is for outdoor and rugged use. And so, okay, part of this case is like, oh yeah, extend it to protect the screen so you don't have the rounded corners of the screen, sure. They've also like added a bumper to the right edge where to protect the
oh, I hit my watch knob. On things all the time, so that is a great idea. Yeah.
It's good for you. They've also made the grooves on the digital crown are a lot coarser. The crown itself is 30% bigger.
Groovier crown. Okay.
Groovy kind of crown. And then the dock button on the right is a little like bigger and is raised up higher from, you know, previous Apple Watches. And then there's the action button on the left, which you can customize to do anything. Lord almighty, the number of times I have accidentally pushed into any of these things. Look, I used a very thick pair of gloves, like work gloves, to test these out, and they work so well when you're wearing gloves. But when you're not, and you're just like in real life wearing this thing, The placement of the action button is so that like anytime I need to push the digital crown to go back a page or go back to the home page, for example, I use my thumb on the other side to kind of like brace it a little bit, but I keep accidentally bracing it on the action button. And so depending on what you've set the action button to do, which you can customize, you either like, for me, I've been creating waypoints throughout my hike just the whole time, just like, oh, whoa, no, dropped it, oops, by accident, right? And then after the video was shot, I had set it to like set a hiking workout. And I share my Apple Fitness Plus stuff with Chris Velasco, former friend of Engadget.
Former friend?
And
wow.
Former friend, yeah. Former friend of Engadget. So like in the middle of the day, I'm like just randomly starting hikes by accident. So he like keeps getting notifications that I'm going on hikes. I'm just like, no, I'm not. Chill. And these are like 0 minute, 2 calorie hikes because I'm like, ah, crap. I had to cancel them. And then also, this is the one that pisses me off the most. It's because the bumper and the buttons that it houses, like the crown and the action button, are so raised, they are so easy to depress that when I do my workouts now, my regular HIIT workouts, I keep pausing the exercise by accident. So I'll be like halfway through my 45-minute workout, look at my watch, and it goes 9 minutes, pause. Do you know how infuriating that is?
A workout's only useful if you have the data from it. I mean,
exactly, if I can brag about it.
If you could be on the leaderboard with your friends and show off.
Oh, I am on the. I am. Well, so far I am placed second in my entire class of like I don't know how many people, but I am second in the challenge. I'm second place, tracking to stay in second place.
But Apple, other than these annoyances, you do seem to like the Apple Watch Ultra.
Yes, unfortunately, apart from which, to be clear, this is quite a big problem, but it is also solvable if I just turn the watch into my like on the other side of my wrist. And then I stop pressing all these buttons by accident. Accidental button trigger is a problem, but everything else, this is basically it's a full-featured Apple Watch. You've got the basic Apple Watch experience, plus all these extra things like the compass, like the wayfinder, the night vision screen, the emergency SOS if you need it. There's the long battery life. The battery life is incredible. I mean, again, when I'm not taking it out on a hike and using the GPS all the time, yeah, it lasts me 3 days easy. Like I said, I think 60 hours is almost like an on the nose sort of estimate because it's 48 and change.
How bright does the screen feel? Because I see this thing can hit 2000 nits, which is eye searing. In a little watch like that, does it make
a
difference?
I see you haven't watched our video.
Yeah,
because
I have not.
No, there is
why
a,
would
there,
I watch our videos? Come on.
Guess. How dare you? No, we got to a creek and we were like under direct sunlight and we were looking at the screen. It's very, very readable. Part of it is yes, the 2000 nit brightness screen, but another part of it is Apple has been so consistent throughout the UI to use black background and big lettering, bright letters. It's just designed for visibility, so it's easy to see even in direct sunlight. The brightness doesn't really hurt. I haven't really had my retinas seared off in the theater or in my
I feel bed. Like this could be the proliferation of smartwatches has really made a cinema going very annoying because people aren't nice about that. So a lot of them aren't smart enough to like dim at, you know, when you're in a dark room or people aren't taking them off. So yeah, that's a shame.
So I want to quickly shout out that I'm also testing the Fitbit Sense 2 at the same time. And now I'm like, I see why everything on Fitbit OS, like why I hated it before. I don't want to talk too soon because I think I still need to do some troubleshooting with Fitbit to figure out why some of these annoyances are happening. But the Fitbit Sense 2 is the next generation of the company's like higher end smartwatch. It does everything. It's got a skin temperature sensor. It's got like ECG blood ox, all of that stuff. And it looks nice. They've redesigned the entire case and everything.
That's a really nice design. Yeah,
it is. The problem is, everyone I've told about the Fitbit Sense 2 that's slightly aware of tech, they're like, why is Fitbit still making a watch when the Pixel Watch is around the corner?
Yes.
Everyone is asking me that. And I'm like, that is a very good question.
Pixel Watch may not be exercise oriented too, so.
Well, they're supposed to do stuff like the Apple Watch does. So like some exercise features, right? There will be a Fitbit app on the Pixel Watch. And the design is still different. But when I'm confronted with a question and through like my experience with the Fitbit Watch so far, there's just some stuff on it that's so dumb. That's like, why is your UI like this? Why are the features like this?
You mean Google is bad with consumer products?
This is not Google.
Yeah.
This is Fitbit still. It's like Fitbit by Google.
Fitbit by Google.
I feel like we're at the tail end of Fitbit doing its own smartwatches. I feel like this product might have been in the works since before the merger. So maybe that's why it still exists. But I mean,
are people more excited for the Pixel Watch? Because I feel like Google is a brand where I'm like, I'm not going to trust your first gen product. I've been through this before with you, Google.
Right. What do you mean more? More than who? More than what product?
More than Fitbit. Like, would they?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if there's a more or less. I don't know that people who like Fitbit are also fans of Google. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that there's a comparison to be made there, but I struggle with a Fitbit smartwatch that isn't a Google smartwatch because the OS is kind of limited. It's not all the way
thought
through.
This is an Android. This is like the Fitbit thing, right? So
exactly. And so I have specifics on why, but I can't remember offhand right now. I say it's like, just stay tuned for my more detailed impressions. Like, the review embargo lifted this week. I just haven't had time to give y'all.
This is one of those things too, where it's like, where the Pixel Watch is coming. Why did Fitbit release this at all? I feel like somebody could have been like, guys, you're just wasting time here. You're kind of wasting efforts, unless it's like just for the Fitbit fans, for that built-in market, I guess. That seems like a bad reason to do this. Anyway, we have one quick question from the chat. I think you had mentioned this, but did you try putting on gloves to try the button and crown? And
yeah, I absolutely did. Okay. Yes, exactly. And it's in the video, so check it out.
Check out the
video,
please.
Watch the video and tell us if you like the style.
Give it a thumbs up.
It's a very different style.
Yeah, please. I do like more experiential videos because a lot of our videos we also do off of scripts and things like that. And I feel like being out in the wild.
This was unscripted.
Unscripted. Sherlyn, oh no.
I know.
Yeah, that seems like a red flag.
Look. We didn't get the first wave of Apple Watch Ultra review units. Everyone else that was like, you that had their videos go up already. So we were like, okay, how can we be a little bit different? And so the answer is unleash an unscripted share into the woods.
Without the dog, unfortunately.
Unleash me, and that's how we get a different video. But y'all watch it and let me know what you think.
We'll keep an eye out for the print, the written review soon. I mean, this thing, it looks so cool, but I'm also like, I think I will be fine with the series, what are we at now, 8? Which has like the crash sensing and a lot of other things. So, you know, I wish the Apple Watch Ultra was like more practical. But it's just so pretty. That's the other thing.
What's funny is that I think I'm still going to keep wearing this as opposed to the Series 8.
It looks cool. Looks cool.
Because it's eye-catching.
Damn it. Because
everyone will keep asking me, is that that one? They won't know the name, but is that? It's like a conversation
starter.
We
absolutely made fun of desk jockeys who would be getting the Apple Watch Ultra, you know? And I feel like within a year, I will be in danger of becoming one of those. But maybe it'll make me be like, I spent $800 on a watch. I should go outside and be in nature. Yeah. In my suburbs.
It's a very aspirational
device. I'll set a waypoint
device.
All the way to Starbucks just so I don't get lost. Really.
To find the bathroom again. Here was a bathroom that I liked. Yeah. Clean bathroom number one. Clean bathroom number two.
Another review I just want to quickly mention. I reviewed the Sonos Sub Mini, something I think we have been waiting for a very long time. This is a $429 subwoofer that pairs wirelessly with Sonos's wired speakers, and that's important. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But check out my review and a review video we did all around my home. Unfortunately, we couldn't get audio from this thing because, like, capturing subwoofer sound on a camera is hard. Like, it's unfortunate. But I put this thing with the Sonos Arc, which is their big boy soundbar. I put it with the Beam in my bedroom, and like, it is really nice and really powerful for this price and for something this size. It is not for everybody. It's not for everybody, but I feel like for people with Sonos gear in an apartment, especially, where you may want a little occasional low end and you don't want to buy Sonos's freaking ridiculous $749 big sub. The big sub has always been wild to me. I had one for a while and, you know, it was too much. It was too much for an apartment. It was too expensive. I couldn't recommend it to people. This one just makes a lot more sense. Check out my review. I really dig this thing, especially if
do you want to send it to me? I don't have a Beam.
I have a Beam. That's it for the Sonos Sub Mini, but be sure to check out my review and check out the video. Let me know what you think of it. Moving on to some other news. There's other news in addition to this thing. Intel has had, they had a big tech event this week where they showed off a slidable PC with Samsung, which I feel like, Sherlyn, we have seen prototypes of tech like this being demoed before. So basically, imagine a normal, screen, a normal 13-inch screen, and you just pull it like Stretch Armstrong, and it turns into a 17-inch display, and kind of cool. That's it.
It's the company that has done this before is TCL, uh-huh, by the way. Yes. TCL made a slideable phone. Uh-huh. So this is a bigger version of it.
It's cool. Cool. And the demo we see shows like somebody pulling the screen and it just like seamlessly extends and the image just keeps going. It is a cool idea. We'll probably see a whole bunch of this stuff. And if this tech could ever be practical enough to be like, okay, you could put it in a 15-inch laptop, maybe. If it could be in something like, you know, an XPS 15, and then when you sit down at a table, you just, like, yank the screen and, like, or you pull it forward and it makes the screen bigger, that could be interesting. I feel like the mechanics
Black Mirror territory. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just fascinating. The big thing from Intel, by the way, is the 13th gen CPUs, which this is going to be a very busy month because I'm going to be getting these into test soon. And this the 13900K, which is the new top of the line one, has 24 cores. It reaches up to 5.8 gigahertz. We're still not regularly getting, we're not at 6 gigahertz as a standard yet. The 24 cores, 8 performance cores, 16 efficiency cores, which is the hybrid design they started doing last year. Last year's 12th gen chips were surprisingly like powerful. Like they benchmarked higher than AMD. Intel just took a big leap forward, even though power efficiency and things like that were like, they had to generate more power. They're still using a bigger process than AMD is. But Intel is definitely cramming a lot of like use out of this thing. Let me see here. The 13900K, Intel says it is 15% faster than the 12900K from last year in single-threaded cast, 41% faster for multi-threaded work like video encoding and rendering. So a big leap. If you have a 12th gen chip, you probably don't need to upgrade. But I do think for people with like a 10th gen or 11th even, or anything older, this is probably a good time to go Intel. You'll need a new motherboard for this and AMD's new chips. But man, it sounds exciting. And also, like, even the Core i5s and the i7s are getting like bumped up quite a bit. You know, let me see here. The Core i5 13600K adds 4 more cores and 200 more megahertz of speed. The i7 13700K now offers up to 16 cores, which these numbers sound big, but again, it's a balance of performance and efficiency cores. So not like full speed like AMD. Like all of AMD's cores are full speed cores. So interesting though, like from the benchmarks we've seen and from the work we've tested with these things, the 12th gen chips were great. Looking forward to seeing like what happens here. Intel also announced a Unison app. This is they bought a company called Screenovate last year, and I've talked about this earlier around CES. This is an app that will let you text from your iPhone or Android on a PC. Transfer files, make calls. This is something we've had. You know, Windows has had the My Phone or Your Phone app, but it only works with Android, because only Android lets you get into this stuff. The thing about Screenovate is that they had figured out how to do a lot of this through iOS back in the day, and Intel is just kind of like jumping off of that. I did confirm that, unfortunately, you will be a green bubble if you're texting through Unison. Okay. So that's a shame. It's not using iMessage. It's using the standard SMS platform. But it's interesting. Like it could be a good way to text from your phone. But I also feel like a lot of people will just want to preserve their iMessages. So I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It turns out Dell already used a version of this, right? In their Dell Mobile
Connect.
Dell
used a version of it I forget if like Dell's actually worked with iPhones. We never actually got to test it fully.
Yeah. So, we don't know if it actually worked with iPhone, but we did do a video back in, I think, 2016. Dell was using Mobile Connect.
Yeah.
Yeah. So make sure to look that video up because it has some explanation. I didn't even remember that I covered it until Daniel Rubino from, I think, Windows Authority. Anyway, tagged me in a tweet saying like, hey, this video from Sherlyn explains this thing. And I was like, cool. So apparently we already saw this. It's just, better implemented. That's very cool. I'd love to be able to use my phone for my PC.
But I do feel like, so the thing that's really nice about Mac OS and iOS integration is that you're still an iMessage, right? You could still all the iMessage features. You're not losing your bubbles. I do know iPhones get weird when you start like texting separately while you're trying to do an iMessage chat, and like it kind of breaks chats in your actual like message history. So I feel like that could be really annoying for a lot of people, but we will see.
So you would lose the history or something.
I don't think you lose the history, but it becomes messy if you're like green texting, in especially if it's like a group chat or something. I don't know. We'll have to test it and see how it does. But hey, 13 stone chips until Unison. Unison is also weird because it's only coming to some 12th gen systems later this year. It's going to come to 13th gen systems next year. Intel, their head of mobile, Josh Newman, said that it could come to older chips eventually. They're just kind of testing it. And I did press him. I was like, there's no reason this wouldn't work on AMD chips. Like, would you guys partner with AMD to just like let this work so Windows users can, you know, be thrown a bone here? That's pretty much it. We have a lot of hardware coming in too. I will be getting their new GPUs to chat about in a bit, to review. We have so much hardware. Like, I'll have chips from Intel and AMD. We have GPUs coming from other companies, and it's going to be a busy, busy time. I have to rebuild my PC, folks. So it's that time of the year, or every couple of years. It's exciting, but boy, is it going to take a long, long time. Hopefully by next week, I will have fully rebuilt and everything will be working. We shall see. And speaking of Intel Unison, be sure to stay tuned to the end of this episode for our interview with Josh Newman, VP of Mobile Innovation at Intel. We dive into the specifics of Unison, kind of what led into it, and where he sees this technology going. In other news, NASA successfully smacked its DART spacecraft into an asteroid. This was a test. I remember reading about this too, and you can read our story. But basically, a small vehicle, they just struck into an asteroid to see if like we could use this technique, potentially use this technique to stop an asteroid that was actually headed for Earth. They did it, thanks to the power of math. This thing was only about the size of a vending machine, so that's cool.
We can destroy small asteroids now in case of threatening life.
Threatening life. Earth, I don't know, like
planet threatening stuff. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We can't do what was the comet. The comet was from the Netflix movie that was kind of so-so, right?
Moon.
Not the one with the DiCaprio. Yeah.
Oh, don't look up. Don't look up.
Maybe we could do this down the line. Maybe I don't. It's more feasible than sending a bunch of miners up there to slowly chip a asteroid into small pieces. I feel like that technique would take a little more work, but it's very cool to see this happen. We also see all the news about Ura's third generation smart ring. Do you like this thing at all, Sherlyn? Like, I know people like it.
Yeah, no, a lot of people are very into this. I haven't just tested one myself yet, but I'm probably going to call one in soon. This is the... For me, the draw is that it's a small wearable. And I still do want to track my sleep. I just don't want to wear a watch. So a ring could be something that I wear to sleep instead of, I guess, bedside tracker or a watch.
And this one is finally getting smooth edges, which is nice.
Exactly.
Because I'm not going to wear a ring with sharp edges. What are you talking about? Wow, it took them three generations to do this. But okay.
We'll see. Mm-hmm. I'm just excited because I think that there's a lot of interest in a product like this, and I thought people should know we have a third generation version coming out.
It's very cool. That's pretty much it. Let's move on to what we're working on. Honestly, I mentioned what I'm working like, but I'm juggling a bunch of stuff. There's too much. Sherlyn, are you one of shouting anything out, or are you just dead from?
Yeah, the Fitbit review is on its way. We've got a lot of other reviews in the works because people can't stop trying to kill us. And then we have the Pixel event next week. We will be live blogging, I believe, from the event. So make sure to stay tuned to Engadget.com for the details and for the live blog. Come check me, be sassy in text.
Come check it out. There's also a Microsoft event in a couple weeks. So it's a busy, busy time. And actually, yeah, I got to make plans for that too. So we shall see.
I have my invite and I want to go with you all, but I think they're trying to keep me from killing myself.
Yeah, so. No, I think the whole point is to avoid that. But yeah, I'm looking forward to maybe going into New York and actually doing this in person. So we shall see. Let's move on to pop culture picks. Sherlyn, Shirley, again, every week I can look forward to some nice intellectual discourse. Nope. From your pop
intellectual
culture picks.
Hey, actually, yes, there is intellectual discourse this time. So this time I, couldn't think of what I've been watching except for a trashy show called The Bachelorette. Now, to be clear, I do not want to recommend that you watch The Bachelorette because The Bachelor franchise is very problematic. We've just been talking about it for years and seasons.
Bachelor in Paradise is it part of The Bachelorette? Is it a spinoff? What's going on here?
So Bachelor in Paradise is part of the franchise, but it is a different formula. Okay. So Bachelor in Paradise just kicked off on Tuesday this week. And it basically draws from all of the failed / non-successful love finders. Is that what we'll call them? Single people from previous franchises. And they put them all on an island. And they're like, get drunk and hook up. And then try to leave here as a couple. Because if you don't, you know, then boo. Sucks to be you. The show is very heteronormative. The show's used to be very, you know, very one-tone, white, mostly white candidates and stuff like that. But they're trying to be a bit more diverse, but they're still having a lot of problems with that. I want to shout out that, like, there was a lot of public discourse, at least in Bachelor Nation, which is what Bachelor watchers call themselves, that the current winner of The Bachelorette, and by winner, they mean the person that she picked to get married to, right? The current winner has a history of, like, some drama, and of the two controversies that were kind of in the conversation during the finale season, one of them was some of his texts to an ex-girlfriend, and another was a photo of him wearing blackface that surfaced, right? And right, but like instead of, you know, focusing the finale and giving some time to talking about that, the producers were like, we're going to talk about your texts. Because I guess it's more relevant to the discourse. I don't know. But it's something that the producers of The Bachelor have kind of sidestepped for a very long time. They did their one episode where they're like, the first Black Bachelor. And then that season was nuts. And they've never really, you know, done better since. They've not made a consistent effort. They changed their hosts because of their, some of the criticism they've received about being a little too archaic or whatever. So anyway, I want to just say that I think the Bachelor franchise should have talked about the blackface controversy. Mm-hmm. I think they should do better. And maybe if more people were aware of this controversy, there would be more pressure. But I think there is a huge audience already, so I'm not adding too much to this. However, Bachelor in Paradise is a little bit more fun. You see a lot more natural, organic relationships form, but you still see a lot of people being idiots. And for that reason alone is why I watched this show, is because I just feel better about myself watching people being idiots. And if you want to, sure, you can.
Sure. There you go. There you go. As for me, I just want to quickly shout out the Avatar re-release in theaters. Did you ever see Avatar, Shalyn?
Yes, okay. Have several times.
Okay, so you're one of those folks that saw it multiple times. I enjoyed going back to the theater to see this. It was in better 3D than I think I originally saw it in. The remaster also does some interesting stuff. There are high frame rate scenes for some of the action scenes, so it actually makes things look a little smoother. It was a good experience, and I have not watched this movie since it like first hit theaters because I just have no desire to watch it at home. And there is a big conversation going on about like the cultural relevancy of this movie. You can check out my podcast, The Filmcast, about that, because I basically did a whole data dump about why this is happening and just why it's weird. Like, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but it is weird that the highest grossing movie of all time has kind of left very little impact on our pop culture. If you want to hear the data, I bring up numbers from fanfiction.net. Google Trends.
Ooh.
Like there's all sorts of stuff, which
fanfiction.net,
which genuinely shows that nobody is like engaging with Avatar as a franchise or as a, you know, as a subject. It is just weird, but I did enjoy seeing the re-release. I think watching it again, the movie doesn't hold up as much for me. Like a lot of the things, the white savior narrative, the fact that they're essentially just alien Native Americans or alien natives and like tribal cultures. It's just like a remix of tribal, so many exactly. things in on Earth. That part of it just didn't really sit right with me. Also, Sam Worthington, not great. Kind of sucks. Not great. But I did like the visuals. I did like going to the journey to see Pandora again. So if you liked Avatar, if you've never seen it before, there are kids. There are kids who are like 10 years old now who have never had the opportunity to see this movie in theaters. So it is worth it. And there's a short clip of the next movie at the end. And that was beautiful. I do think like clearly they've made some huge leaps in CG quality, especially water, like the water stuff. The next movie is called The Way of Water. Looks incredible. So I'm not excited for it as a narrative, but certainly as an experience, as a theatrical experience, it's going to be very intriguing. So check out Avatar if you can. Check out my full thoughts at The Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at...
@Devendra on Twitter and @thefilmcast@thefilmcast.com.
If you think you can do better than me on my daily workout challenge, you can send me your challenge on Twitter. I am at Sherlyn Lowe.
But you will not become a friend. Like, just to be clear.
We're not friends. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts.
Here's our chat with Josh Newman, VP of Mobile Innovation at Intel, around Unison, their new tool that will let you be able to send texts, make calls, transfer files on your PC to iOS and Android devices. We have definitely seen products like this around Android phones on Windows, like the Your Phone app from Microsoft. But bringing in iOS is certainly a new thing, and I want to chat with Josh about, you know, how Intel accomplished this and where they see this technology going down the line. Here's Josh.
What we're excited about and what we're trying to do at Intel with Intel Unison is solve a real customer pain point or customer need, which is, you know, people go to their laptop to get, or to their PC to get really important work done, and their sessions, they tend to want to be focused. They want to, you know, it's something important, but they also want to stay connected with all of their devices while they're in their laptop. So it's a distraction, for example, to be working on something deeply, and then, you know, go, your phone rings or you get a text, and to divert your attention from the laptop to go look at the phone and deal with that. It's much easier if you can stay in your zone, in your focus, and handle some of those interactions seamlessly just from the laptop. And so, but we also believe everybody's different. People, you know, different PC users use different devices. Some use iPhones, some use Android phones, different tablets, and so forth. So we wanted to bring a solution that could be done in an open way as possible, built on top of standard APIs and interfaces, so that we can provide that choice, that ability for customers that are using their PCs and need these kinds of multi-device experiences to enrich their overall laptop or PC experience, right? We wanted to be able to have that be an open way that they can choose the kinds of devices they want to use and not be locked into a specific one.
Yeah, and we had a great chat around CES, I believe, when you guys were kind of teasing out this information. We reported on the acquisition of Screenovate. Screenovate is a company we've looked at, you know, for years, actually. I know Dell has used some of their tech, too, for a similar PC Connect software. Can you talk about, like, what is Intel doing to improve upon it and expand upon what Screenovate is offering?
So the big thing we did was, by bringing the Screenovate team into Intel, we're able to take the technology that they had to deliver these experiences over open standard interfaces and APIs, and then pair that up with Intel's deep capabilities in the PC connectivity stack. So think about our Wi-Fi and our Bluetooth, some of the work we're doing on modems, and also some of our platform capabilities. So to think through, you know, how do you make everything work together through the connectivity and make sure it's persistent and easy, but also how do you make sure that it's low power? How do you make sure that while you have this always on application connecting your devices, that you're not hurting the other performance of the system? And so bringing some of our platform engineering expertise to it. So the combination of Screenovate's technology and Intel's approach to delivering customer experiences on the PC platform, working with the OEMs, working with the ecosystem that we've delivered through Intel Evo, those things come together in a really symbiotic way. And so that's the way we're going to bring it to market first is actually through Intel Evo, so that we can stay very focused on the quality of the experience. It will be really focused on integrating with specific designs. And we know the customers of Intel Evo are the ones who tell us they really need this feature the most. But it is our intention to scale it even beyond that in the future. But we want to make sure the quality is just, you know, absolutely world class first, and that it's a great experience and we can learn fast and make it better And then we'd look to, you know, even go bigger beyond EVA.
Gotcha. So I do want to chat about like where this is going to be available first, but I'm intrigued by this technology just because we've seen sort of we've seen some Android applications that could get an Android phone to connect with the PC pretty well. But the iOS side of things has always been super tough. Can you like give us a sense of like how, you know, Intel Unison is doing this? I'm sure there's a lot of stuff you can't talk about, but you know, how are you guys actually getting access to everything iOS does? Because it seems like that stuff has been locked off by Apple for so long.
Yeah, what I kind of leave it at is this is some of the expertise in standard interfaces that ScreenInnovate brought to the table, and so they were able to do this early and do it in a way that takes advantage of the open interfaces and APIs that are available, not just in Android, but also those that iOS supports. And so that's, you know, we're really just building on top of that, and then trying to assure the quality as you integrate to the platform is world class.
Does a Unison conversation, does it continue as iMessage, or does it show up as like, you know, Green Bubbles SMS on iOS?
Yeah, it's using SMS, so it's right. So now the actual color of the bubbles, you know, we're gonna it'll show up a little bit differently in the UI, but it is using the SMS.
Gotcha. So somebody I know who is, you know, on an iPhone or something or seeing these messages will see them on their phones as green bubbles, basically, as if an Android device was texting them, I guess, right?
It would be similar.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Cool. Yeah.
Because again, it's using the open interfaces that are available.
Right? I kind of expected that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you guys have talked about you're launching first on some 12th gen Evo systems, soon to come on 13th gen systems. First of all, like how are you saying, can you say like what type of devices specifically you're going to start this off with? And I know you want to expand it eventually, but will we ever see older processors and older systems supported with this?
Yeah, so let me take that in order. I think we're going to start with a few Evo laptop designs based on 12th gen from Lenovo, HP, and Acer. And you'll see more of, you know, those designs coming to market later this year. And those are really just the first ones where we're integrating the software, validating it, making sure it works, the quality is excellent. And then as we get to next year with the 13th gen core and the new edition of Evo, we'll be covering a much wider range of those Evo systems. So it'll be much more broadly available within the Evo range of products. And again, that was really a pragmatic approach we took to make sure that we focus the scale so that we get the quality right first and then scale, because it has to be a wonderful experience to really delight customers.
Gotcha. Is there anything specific about the 12th and 13th gen chips that will make this, you know, easier or ready to work? Or is it possible to run on older systems eventually?
Yeah, so it's the integration with our current Wi-Fi and Bluetooth stacks, making sure the latest features are available on those. So it is, there's nothing technically prohibiting it from running on other platforms or older platforms, but what we want to make sure is we're optimizing and tuning the experience with sort of the known capabilities of the connectivity and the overall platform, and then focus going forward on, you know, future PC designs to make sure they're meeting those requirements. So you won't, you know, at least in the short term, it's not a plan to go make it backward compatible to the installed base. Because we want to make sure we're starting from a good set of connectivity drivers and capabilities to assure that it's a great experience. And then we'll, you know, push forward to innovate and make it more broadly available from there.
Gotcha. And I have to ask, is Intel thinking about, could this ever run on an AMD system?
I would say never at this
okay.
point.
Cool. I mean, yeah, we love to see the competition between you guys, but also, you know, working together is always helpful for everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. What I would say is, technically, it's possible. As I said, in the short term, we want to make sure we understand every aspect of the connectivity stack and the like to get the quality experience right, and then look at how we can scale it. We do, just like you said, want this to be the choice for device connectivity to the PC. And we kind of look at, you know, an open approach is the best way to do that. So we are taking that into consideration in our future plans. I would, you know, the important kind of thing here is making, if we can make it the sort of standard for the PC long term, that's great, because then future devices, you know, if it's a future device OS release or a future device that we haven't even thought of yet, they'll look at this as the one they have to make sure works well with. And so you'll get that network effect of the overall industry. And that's really how we see it playing for the long term. And that's how we really want to make it happen with the open industry.
Gotcha. It is. I'm a Windows and PC user at heart, but I do use a lot of Macs at work. And that one thing, that little iMessage synchronization, does make life a lot easier when I'm using a Mac, unfortunately. Just looking ahead, can you talk more about like what the capabilities are in Unison? I assume texting. Will we see file transfer? Will we see like rich RCS support or something like that?
Yeah. So there's a few things in the first version, and the first thing I'd say is the architecture is a very extensible architecture. The way we've architected the application and the capability, it's got it can use multiple connection links, whether it's Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, 5G, cloud. Right, there's different ways to get connectivity, and then we can build in redundancy. So depending, if you think about being on a hybrid network, right, your PC might be on the Wi-Fi while your phone's on the WAN or the 5G. Our solution can solve for them still communicating. The first version is going to have four core capabilities. One is text messages. Two is phone calls. The third is file transfer and fast file transfer. And then the fourth is notifications. And and depending on the device. So in the case of the open RCS, whether it's the notifications are using it or it's for the messages, yes, they can be taking advantage of those richer RCS capabilities. On the file transfer, really big focus for us was the kind of the speed with which, if you take a photo, how quickly it shows up in your gallery, that transfer happens. Or if you drag something into the application on your PC, how quickly it shows up is ready to take on your phone. And then the UI overall, the user interface, just very intuitive, very easy to use. Everything is where it should be. So a lot of focus there on designing a user interface for this that we believe customers will pick up on very easily for those four capabilities. As you go forward, as we think about future versions of this, we're looking at doing a lot of customer research, customer experiences people need the most, extended screen to tablets. Any tablet, Android, iPad, what have you, and using your tablet or your PC to control one or the other. These are things that we're looking at for the future. We have, demoware that we even showed earlier this year at CES, but we do expect that's, on the horizon because we know it's another great need and desire PC users have.
But as a Windows fan, I've been waiting for something like this forever, and I've tried other solutions before, and they've been kind of so-so. So I'm interested to see like how this goes for you guys. Anything else you want to mention, Josh, about Unison, or how things are going for you guys at Intel?
Yeah, no, thanks for that opportunity. Intel Unison is really just the beginning. We're going to be sharing this week the details, just as we're doing here, and we're very excited to get this product out there. And the key thing is what we're also building into this product is the ability to update it quickly. So we're going to be learning fast. We want to make sure the quality is outstanding, but we're going to be learning fast and, making the updates and continuing. And so really big focus for us. We know we're solving, some real customer needs here, and we're taking it very seriously. And then looking forward to getting out to the market, getting the customers' hands, learning what else we could be doing better or differently or more of, and building that out over time.
Cool. So. All right. Thank you so much. Looking forward to testing this out, Josh.
All right, Devinder. Thanks so much for the time.